We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, another Nets win. Wasn't necessarily pretty tonight, but they got the job done against Detroit. 195. How we feeling, Jack?
James Edward Harden Jr., give him the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, this was great. You know, not necessarily Harden's best game, but he came up clutch at the end. I think he scored the Nets' last 10 points. Before we jump into it, as always, Jack, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But Jack, where do you want to start with this one?
Look, I think we'll go down the stretch, Nick, because there seemed to be a little bit of a buffer for the Nets. We're like, okay, we've got the sort of 10-12 point lead, I think, heading into the last quarter. And it was like, okay, the Nets will hopefully blow it out, get a bit of rest for some of the guys that we need to get some rest for. But the Pistons, credit to them, they just continue to hang around. The Nets were a little bit sloppy on both ends of the floor. And the Pistons made the most of our mistakes, and they hung in there. And they just got they just kept chipping away at it. And even down the stretch, you know, they took the lead at one point. But James Harden just stepped up, and he wasn't going to let this team lose tonight. And despite the fact that, again, probably a lackluster performance by his immense standards, if you're going by the last quarter, that's what MVPs do. They step up. They don't let the team lose, no matter who it is. If it's the Detroit Pistons or if it's the Los Angeles Lakers, he was awesome, and he led this team like a true leader does.
Yeah, and I think this game kind of had similar vibes to the Spurs game. You know what I mean? They let them come back late, get into it, where they had that 10-point lead. And like you said, just a little lackadaisical. And I think that's, you know, a good example of the entire night. You know what I mean? They just weren't necessarily super locked in. A couple possessions late just didn't really necessarily make a ton of sense. But like you said, James Harden stepped up, hit those clutch buckets, and really gave the Nets the edge, because Detroit just couldn't do the same thing on the other end. They couldn't get that, you know, ISO score to get those buckets and get those easy points. And it's crazy because, like you said, Jack, he really struggled in this game, but the fourth quarter felt like he was a different player.
And that's just, he's just like, and because his three ball wasn't falling, and it hasn't been falling, you know, the past couple of games, is something like, what, 1 or 2 or 14 from that range. In saying that, he doesn't need it, because one thing that we asked him in the early points of the season is, come on, James, drive a bit, get to the line, get that floater game going. And that floater game looked pretty tonight. Every single time he took it, you know, I was watching the game with my dad, and other him calling Nick Claxton, Nick Craxton. Some of his analysis actually wasn't too bad. Him sort of saying, you know, the footwork of Kyrie Irving and just the composure and poise that he alluded to with, you know, the hands of James Harden. It was just a really good performance from him. You know, Kyrie, I thought, was really, really good in the early parts of the game, keeping us around that mark when James Harden wasn't feeling himself. But, you know, it's the beauty of having the two superstars, the best backcourt in the league. So Harden stepping up, it's what good players do. It's what great players do. He wasn't letting us lose tonight, and it's a good win. You know, get one back on a team that probably turned our season around in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, Jack, I think it's impressive because I would say these are probably both C-plus games for James Harden and Kyrie Irving in terms of their standards, and the Nets still found a way to win, and they shot terribly in this game, at least from three, 6-27, 22%. You know, Brad Stevens just talked about how the Nets might be one of the greatest shooting teams assembled. He gave them a little bit of a jinx.
Yeah, and look, if you're taking out Joe Harris, who was 2-5, and Landry Shamet, who was 3-3, that is basically 1-19. You know, Tyler Johnson hit the only other three tonight. James Harden, 0-6. Kyrie Irving, 0-6. Bruce Brown, 0-1. Jeff Green, 0-2. Claxton, 0-1. Though, you know, Nets Twitter probably would have exploded if Claxton, as my dad likes to say, hit that big one. But yeah, it shows you, Nick, sometimes you just, you got to grind out those wins. You know, they're not going to be memorable. We're not going to be looking back on them. We're not going to be doing rewatches of these sort of games. But at the end of the day, good teams bank wins, and the Nets are one of the best teams in the league, and this is what the best teams in the league do.
Yeah, and that's important, Jack. Like you said, you know, grind out these games. You're not always going to have your offense. You need to find other ways to win. Nets, I think, had 58 points in the paint, did a good job of getting in there. You know, and then defensively, I thought in this game, just a lot of lack of focus. They'd play good defense for, you know, the first half of the possession and then kind of just get lackadaisical, you know, off ball cut, somebody got a good shot, or just give up an offensive rebound. You know, the Pistons lived on offensive rebounds. They had 12 in this game and they killed the Nets in second chance points.
Yeah, and the boards as well, Nick, you know, 12 offensive boards to the Nets, 5, and also, you know, total rebounding points, total rebounding numbers, 47-35 in the Pistons' favor. It just seemed to me that they, you know, DJ wasn't really good tonight. I thought he was below average despite him being relatively consistent. I thought he was good offensively, but I thought he was pretty poor defensively other than maybe a couple of possessions here or there. And I thought that was emblematic of the team overall. I thought Nick Claxton was a lot better. There were times where, you know, he looked a bit off, but then, you know, he had that insane block as well. And he continues to show versatility with his ability to switch out onto guards and wings and such. So, look, you get a good defensive performance from Nicholas Claxton, get a bad defensive performance from DeAndre Jordan. It'd be nice if we can get one from both of them at some stage.
Yeah, and I think DJ in this game too, I think just 29 minutes is a little bit too much. You know, it's like we didn't really see any Jeff Green at center, and obviously the Pistons are a big team, but it's funny because the Nets were playing so small, and it felt like in this game, Nash wanted the Nets to stay relatively big almost the entire time.
Yeah, it seems to me that DJ like really sort of just matched Plumlee's minutes in a lot of respects. And
it's look, Nathan Plumlee, Bran. Man, yeah.
Like it's, you know, former Nets legend Mason Plumlee, might I say as well. But like there were just times where it's just like, you know, he took like a mid-range jump and I'm like, okay, I'm glad this guy isn't on our team anymore. And look, he's a serviceable enough guy, and you know, we on the outlet we dive deep into the contract and such when it did happen. But you know, you could really exploit a Plumlee if you're dragging him out and you make playing a five out sort of game with a Jeff Green, sorry, or if you put Nicholas Claxton on the perimeter as well, because he's going to be happy to take those shots if they are there for him. So I just thought that Steve Nash almost played into the Pistons' hand in a lot of respects. Yes, there were the timeouts, like the timeouts and such. I know you sort of alluded to me in the DMs about, you know, the lack of versatility with some of his lineups. I thought that overall it wasn't his best coaching performance either. Didn't really give the team the best chances to see. I thought sometimes when he was putting out Landry Shamet out there, you know, give the team some juice. Again, the bench, it's two games in a row now, Nick, that we probably get a little bit of extra life from the bench squad. And, you know, full credit to them for two games in a row.
Yeah, Jack, Landry Shamet obviously is, you know, hot right now, like we kind of talked about in the previous game. Maybe this could be the start of something special for him. But just talking about Steve Nash, like you said, you know, I thought, you know, he did make an adjustment in the second half, you know, playing Jeff Green with DeAndre Jordan a little bit more instead of Bruce Brown, at least having that three-point shot. But I would have loved to probably see a little bit of Claxton and Jeff Green with Kyrie, James Harden, and Joe Harris. You know, just that full, you know, defense and offense out there. You get that little bit of versatility. But overall, it just kind of felt like everybody lacked juice for this game. Like nobody really was like super locked in except probably Landry Shamet, which has been the case for the last two games.
And look, it's his birthday. So like the Allen Crabbe experience just scored 40 points on his birthday. But in all seriousness about Landry Shamet, his form of late has been incredible. And we saw this from the, yeah, absolutely. You know, the Yes Network sort of put out some stats over the entire season. In December, 6 points on 25% shooting from three, 5.5 points in January, 32.7% shooting from three. In February, 10.5 points, nearly 41% shooting from three. And in this month of March, 12 points a game on nearly 48% shooting from three, and was again absolutely. And I think beyond his three-point shooting tonight, Nick, that lefty layup off the drive, it was super smooth, super pretty. We've seen it a lot this season. And I think it's partly because he has that confidence and comfortability within his game and within his role now. I think we're going to see this pretty consistently from Landry Shamet. And I think he outplays Sadiq Bey tonight.
Yeah, he did. He did, Jack. And that I think he hit a mid-range jumper in this game, too. A little pull-up one that was pretty smooth. So, like you said, that driving is there. His ability to finish with both hands. And I thought he did a nice job of, like, bringing the ball up and protecting it, where if the defender attempted to block it, it probably would have been a foul call. So, it's really nice to see Shamet finding his groove, especially when the rest of the Nets are maybe struggling a little bit shooting-wise. And also, I put it out on Twitter, like, this could be another added element to this Nets team offensively.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you just have a guy that can just straight cook off the bench. We talked about it after the Boston game, but if he keeps this up, it's just going to be another tool for this Nets offense that seems unstoppable already, and Kevin Durant's not out there.
The Nets are at their best when they play 4-5 out. And most of the time they do play 4-5 out, except for when they basically have their starters with Kevin Durant out with the recent lineups of late. I thought there were a couple of times where I thought the passing was pretty good from Bruce Brown and DJ trying to get each other some sort of open looks. But I think they also just were sometimes too unselfish and not necessarily aggressive enough in getting their own.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
But in saying that, again, Nick, Landry Shamet, and you know, I think that he continues to show why he can be a presence for this team in important minutes. He's going to hit some big shots. He's going to win you a playoff game, win you a playoff quarter. And, you know, 15 points for him, 2 of 3 from the free throw line, 3 of 3 from 3, a lot of 3s in there, and 5 of 6 from the field. Landry Shamet continues to show consistency in a way that you want your role players to do. So you've got to keep giving him those minutes, 20 minutes plus for him. And he is just a goddamn weapon out there. You don't have Joe Harris, you got Landry Shamet. You got your hands full as a defense.
Yeah, and that last three he hit, like fading off the pick, you know, off balance, that's just like I said to you before, he's just really confident right now. And you could see his stroke look smoother when he's confident. There's no hesitation there. But you mentioned Bruce Brown. You know, I think it's just tough playing him with DeAndre Jordan. It's just really congested. And instead of just trying to get a floater over one player, it's now over two players. And obviously, Bruce is already a little bit undersized. So it's weird that Steve Nash just, like, loves to play him with DeAndre Jordan, but we really didn't see much of, like, Bruce Brown and Jeff Green at center tonight. Like, that's something we didn't really see.
Do you think that Bruce Brown should be, you know, put more with the bench, Nick, and you put Jeff Green back with the stars now that he's found... You know, he played 31 minutes tonight, the most out of any Nets, a big, quote-unquote big. Do you think that Jeff Green slots back with the starters and Bruce Brown would fit better with, you know, James Harden off the bench because their two-man chemistry, as we've alluded to in previous episodes, the stats are otherworldly and you line up those minutes sort of there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it doesn't necessarily always matter who starts or whatever. It's just kind of about twining those lineups throughout the game. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to start Bruce Brown and DeAndre Jordan, go ahead. I don't necessarily love the spacing there, but if I understand it from a rotation perspective, if you want to keep Nick Claxton as your backup center, I don't think you're going to end up starting him. And I don't think you necessarily want to play DJ and Claxton together, because I think Claxton, one of his best abilities is, you know, diving to the rim and a lob catcher with, you know, his athleticism. So it's like almost DJ and Claxton kind of getting in the way of each other. So it's kind of Steve Nash trying to find some balance. But like we alluded to on the Boston recap, Jack, like when Kevin Durant comes back, it's going to solve almost all of these problems in terms of the rotation. It's just going to put other guys in different positions.
It does. And to play devil's advocate to our own discussion here, I don't mind trying it against these sort of teams, against the Pistons, and sort of saying, you know what, didn't work against the Celtics. They're a really, really, really good defense. And the Pistons are sneakily pretty good too. They've got a lot of athletes and a lot of wingspan in their lineup. So they certainly made things difficult for the Nets in that respect, despite, you know, outscoring them in points in the paint, as you sort of pointed out. They won, I think it was 58-54. So nice little advantage there. But I think it's something that will need to be adjusted. I don't want to see this lineup again as the starters. Obviously, we may have to in games coming forward. But I just think if you have James Harden, you have Claxton and Bruce Brown as your sort of quote-unquote bigs with your sort of second unit, I think that works a lot better. And maybe sort of mix and match. You know, you might have DJ with Bruce Brown at some certain points. You maybe keep Nick Claxton's minutes down around that 15 to sort of 20-minute sort of mark. But I just think it works better balance-wise. And I think that it's just a little bit clogged out there. And if DJ's in the dunker spot, as well as Bruce Brown, there's not a lot of space for those guys to either sort of show off a bit of their footwork or a bit of their aggression.
Yeah, and then things get a little bit congested for everybody. You know, James Harden doesn't have the driving lane. Same thing for Kyrie Irving. So, like you said, they could go with the Jeff Green starter. Maybe it just means playing DJ less minutes. You know what I mean? And that's not something I would be super opposed to, and trying to find more minutes for Jeff Green at center. But, you know, obviously Blake Griffin will be here soon, too.
Yeah, there's a lot, and we heard the fact that there's no necessary timeline, and I don't think you can necessarily give a timeline to Blake Griffin specifically. Well, we can probably have a bit of a chat about Kevin Durant. We did dive deep into it in the last episode, if you guys want to have a listen to that, and sort of analyzing Steve Nash's quotes and such. But with Blake Griffin, it's just about the ramping up and sort of getting him the reps in the practice court and making sure that he is fully fit. So when he does come onto the court, he doesn't have an injury like Kevin Durant did against Golden State. He needs to be fit and firing. And you know, if he plays 15 minutes in his first game, comes off the bench, sort of replaces Jeff Green as your backup center, I'm pretty happy with it. Or he plays alongside Nicholas Claxton. I think both of those guys would be pretty damn fun to see with James Harden out on the court. The amount of lobs it would be pretty damn fun watching them play together. But I think that there are good problems to have, Nick. I think Bruce Brown just needs to be utilized better, as Steve Nash has done before. You know, he's played best alongside a floor spacing big, alongside a Claxton, alongside a Jeff Green. I think that that's just something that Steve Nash needs to do. I still think that Bruce Brown's hustle and grit is still there. I just don't think he's getting the opportunities to impact the box score as much.
Yeah, he's not necessarily always in the best position for him to be successful. You know what I mean? And it's not his fault. It's literally just like the rotations and the lineups that he's in aren't always ideal for him. I mean, I understand why Steve Nash does want to start him, because he is at least that one defensive enforcer, like that one guy that's going to give high energy and at least make somebody's life difficult on the other end of the floor. That's why it becomes so interesting with DeAndre Jordan, because like I said, you're not going to start Claxton. At least I don't think so.
No, I look, and I think you can make a rational point for starting them. You know, I think these are the times to try them. Again, so your message sort of saying, you know, we want Steve Nash to show a little bit more flexibility, throw some things out there, experiment a little bit. And he has done that before. I'm not saying that he's never done that. I just think that now you've sort of seen, you've gotten your sample size of what Bruce Brown and DJ look like together. Get a bit wacky with it. You got Blake Griffin on coming back soon. And he even said himself that he has no idea what he's going to do with the lineups when Blake Griffin and Kevin Durant do come back. He's focusing on what he has there now. What he has there now, he's sort of seen a large enough sort of sample size to sort of go, this kind of doesn't work. I need to be a little bit more creative with what I do, whether that's have a word with Mike D'Antoni, maybe Udoka, Jacques Vaughn, and sort of try and make it better, because Bruce Brown is still impacting the game. You look beyond the box score, but he's not going to have 29-point performances alongside DeAndre Jordan with the starters. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, especially I think teams are starting to get a better idea of like what the Nets are trying to do with these two as well. You know what I mean? It was also like kind of like, oh, this is the first time we're seeing it. They're going to run a ton of pick and roll with Bruce Brown or pick and pop or whatever they're doing. You know what I mean? So now it's like teams are adjusting. They see what's out there and they're kind of putting the Nets in a different position. And then obviously it always sticks out more when your 3-point shooters aren't knocking down their shots. You know what I mean? Like we shot 22%. If Joe Harris shot well in this game. If Kyrie and James Harden are cooking in this one, it's less impactful. But when the shooting's not there, that's when it really sticks out.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. And, you know, the strengths of Bruce Brown are similar to the strengths of DeAndre Jordan from around that the really, really close range around the rim. And showing strength and a good rebounder, and both are really, really good screeners. If you overlap with strengths, unless you are a shooter or a perimeter player, and you both of those strengths can mesh well together, I just don't think it works necessarily cohesively and synergistically. I'm not sure if that's in synergy in a way that I think benefits the Nets and benefits the team as a whole.
I agree, Jack, 100%. Who you want to talk about next?
Like, I just want to get into... How has Joe Harris still not cleaned up these scratches? You know, I gave him a bit of ointment after the game the other night. Clearly it wasn't working, or he's been doing some things on the side, because he's still getting scratched up. And those are some deep, deep scratches. And he still had a nice, really solid performance. One thing I wanted to touch on, Nick, especially, that sidestep three, that was pretty as hell.
Yeah, it was on Wayne. It's a different shot, too. You know what I mean? That was contested. It was pretty heavily contested, and he knocked it down. So... I mean, a lot of confidence there. And just, you know, about the scratches, I think a lot of the scratches, to be honest, is like off-ball movement. Not you, Jack. Stop smirking over there. It's off-ball movement with players trying to grab his shoulders, but it just goes to show you how aggressive they are in trying to stop him, that he's getting literally scratched up.
Yeah. I think someone in a conversation on Twitter was sort of saying, you know, his girlfriend might be Catwoman or something like that. Which I thought was quite funny. But yeah, just to reiterate the point on that sort of sidestep three, that is a strength going even stronger in his own game. Joe Harris is already one of the two or three, or if not best, three-point shooters in the league. And you only make it better by increasing the diversity to your strength, by being able to make those type of shots in a way that, you know, he's learning something from James Harden, Stephen Curry, Damian Lillard, these sort of dudes. We know Joe Harris has been taking some deeper threes. We know his footwork has gotten better. I think that probably started in the bubble and has gone, you know, and he's taken that into the season with us. He's gotten the confidence with James Harden, with Kyrie Irving, with Kevin Durant around him. And you know, his strengths have become even stronger, and he's just becoming a really balanced player. You know, only 10 points tonight, but, you know, he was rebounding the ball well. I thought his defense was continually good. And again, just another really solid performance from Joey, and a nice little offensive board as well. I think he's just sneakily, in a Bruce Brownie sort of way, impacting in ways that role players do. And that's what you want to really complete the whole unit as a whole and make sure you're making winning plays, even if you're not hitting 8 of 10 from 3, which he does on some occasions. 2 of 5 from him for tonight, 40%. That's almost a bad night for him overall in his overall percentages. But he continues to do things beyond the three-point shot.
Yeah, and you could argue he's negatively impacted by having two non-floor spacers out there. You know what I mean? And DeAndre and Bruce Brown, it's just like, hey, this is the guy we need to worry about. We're not going to help off him. We're going to help off the other two guys. And it just feels like these last two games, it's been tough for the Nets to generate three-point looks for Joe Harris, where it felt like, you know, before in the first half of the season at times, it was just like a cakewalk. It was like James Harden was just passing him the ball and he was open. So something to keep an eye on. I thought Joe was solid defensively. I thought he had a couple of lackadaisical plays just like the entire team tonight. It was just kind of like a group effort of not being super locked in.
It's Saturday night in New York. Nick. I think they've got some other things on their mind. And I think
some might be fatigued, to be honest.
I think it's mental and physical fatigue. This season as a whole, we can't underestimate and have such high... I mean, we should have high standards for this team because we know what they can do. We know what they can produce. But as long as they're banking the wins and they're moving on to the next one at a time, this is an absolute slog of a season. I can't imagine the physical and mental drain that is on these guys night after night after night. And thankfully, the Nets have a decent schedule going forward, so they'll be able to be a little bit more engaged in games, and we should have that expectation of them. But at the same time, I think they've got high standards for themselves as well, and they'll probably be like, this wasn't our best game. We got the win. We'll move on to it. And you sort of take the good and you take the bad, and you go to game 40, hopefully get a win against the Knicks. But yeah, I think this season overall, Nick, I think it's been a combination of this season and the latter points of last season. It's just going to be, we can't underestimate the mental and physical grind that is being put on these athletes right now, especially NBA players, where they're playing, you know, 72 games in a span of, you know, however, 170 days or whatever the hell it is. It's some pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah, it really is. And like you said, Jack, luckily the Nets don't have the craziest second half of the schedule because they didn't have any postponements, which is a plus. And then hopefully when Kevin Durant and Blake Griffin are back, they can rest some guys. Because I think one person that sticks out and looks a little fatigued is James Harden. And I think, like you said, some of it is mental fatigue. just like not being fully engaged and locked in and not having any rest. You know, James Harden, Kyrie Irving had to go to the All-Star game, so the other guys at least had some time off. It's just like you said, a continued grind, and there's not really necessarily a break unless your team can afford to give you one.
Definitely. You know, 38 minutes for James Harden tonight, he'd probably be averaging that on the season. Kyrie having 36 minutes, you want to keep that down, 35 lower if you can. But obviously these guys are leading the team, and we need them to be out there in important minutes. And despite the fact that, you know, Reggie Perry is back, Chris Chioza hanging around at TLC, I think is healthy.
No, he was out.
Not yet, but he was on the bench, and he's continuing to look good. Not necessarily as good as Blake is. He's always looking good, sipping his coffee out there. Our Nets love their beverages, be it a smoothie, be it a coffee. Nick, if you had to choose between a smoothie or a coffee, what are you picking?
Smoothie.
Yeah, I'm going to go Team Kyrie as well. Give me that Jamba Juice. I miss Jamba Juice quite a bit. It's one of the first places. As soon as I get off at like JFK or if I get off at LAX, I'm always going to Jamba Juice. It's just get the sugar levels, get me a bit hyped after a really goddamn long flight.
Good, but healthy energy in comparison to coffee will give you like that spike, and then you might die down a little bit afterwards. And obviously, you know, smoothie, better for the hydration, dehydration with the coffee, so...
Well, I mean, if I asked you if it was a protein shake, I think I know what you probably sound about too. But in saying that, Nick, I wanted to touch on Nicholas Claxton. What did you think of his game overall tonight? That block, I mean, was absolutely crazy. And as well, the and one finish, which caused the proud parents and Kyrie and DeAndre Jordan to show a pretty goddamn loving hug. Oh, man, I need to find someone that hugs me like Kyrie hugs his teammates. Sad.
No, it was a really sporadic game for Nick Claxton. It felt like more of a rookie sophomore game than what we've seen over, the first few games he was back. You mentioned defensively, I thought he popped a little bit more on that end. Offensively, he looked a little out of sorts, you know, trying to find his spacing out there too. I think he bobbled a couple passes, just kind of typical stuff you'll see. But like you said, he did have the highlight play, ended up getting the steal, I think, on Isaiah Stewart, you know, took the ball in transition, down court, and won. And I mean, not many centers are going to be doing that in the NBA with that level of comfort and confidence.
Yeah, and he got to the line on another occasion in transition too. And, you know, probably one of the highlight plays of the night was his block leading to the Tyler Johnson pull-up three. That was
was crazy.
It was insane. You know, he is so goddamn quick, so goddamn long. And I actually like that matchup because I like Isaiah Stewart as well. He seems to be a bit more of a bruiser, a bit tougher, sort of like a Reggie Perry
vibes.
Yeah, Reggie Evans, Reggie Perry sort of vibes in my eyes. And I like him. I think he's going to be a bit of a player. So that was a fun matchup. You know, two promising young bigs going up against each other. I think both of them got the best of each other on occasions. I thought it sort of evened out in a bit. But yeah, Clark's 8 points, 3 boards, 2 assists, had a steal, had 2 blocks as well. Needs to practice his free throws a little bit as well. But yeah, in saying that, if he hits the three as well, Nets Twitter might explode. But he is still a young player. And, you know, you could certainly advocate for him finishing this game in a lot of respects. But I still also do think that he is finding his legs and he is finding, you know, the pace of the game and such. And it's going to be a work in progress. And, you know, come game 55, 60 and such, I think that it's more likely we see him in closing those games, you know, than in game 4 or 5 of this regular season for him.
Yeah, he still needs to get some things down fundamentally on both ends of the floor. And then obviously, like they've talked about, adjusting to the NBA strength, because there's a couple plays where he just got muscled and that's going to happen. But it's just kind of him adjusting and being prepared for those situations. And I think, like you said, Jack, as the season progresses, they're going to play him a little bit more and try him out in other situations. Tonight, just didn't get a ton of run, I guess. But 17 minutes isn't too bad for him in comparison to at times. We just wanted to see him on the court last year.
Yeah, and look, in saying that, I think James Harden was the best post defender tonight. He was so damn good down there. He had 3 blocks for himself as well. If we didn't mention the stat line, just to reiterate it, 24 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds. Yeah, another triple-double for the bid. Also had 2 steals, 8 of 8 from the free throw line. Didn't have the 3-ball going, didn't hit any of his 6 shots. But yeah, I thought his post defense, I'm just like, please, James Harden, I hope he gets switched on into the post, because I remember there was a play in the last game against the Boston Celtics where I'm like, he's down the perimeter. I'm like, yep, Tatum's going to drive here. He's going to cook him. He's going to cook him off the dribble. But if James Harden's in the post, there is no player in the league that I think is as... Well, there are some other decent post defenders, but you can't, like, budge him. Like, he's just so thick. He's so goddamn thick.
For an undersized player, like you said, Jack, I don't think there's many guards in the NBA that are going to hold centers in the post. And it's almost like you want him to be there because he's engaged and locked in. It's he struggles in other aspects, especially like off-ball defense and some stuff getting over screens. And a lot of that is just effort-related. But post is kind of, I don't want to say the easiest form of defense, but you don't necessarily have to do a ton of like running around.
It suits him. And I actually will say as well that Kyrie Irving's start to the game, especially the first half, I thought his defensive engagement and defensive execution was awesome. The way he was fighting under and over screens, getting steals, getting out in transition. You know, he had 3 steals tonight. I thought this was one of the better defensive performances of the season for Kai.
Yeah, I think that's what he needs to do because there's going to be possessions where he gets beat. It's the quick hands, it's the deflections, about like creating some type of impact and making people uncomfortable. And like you said, Jack, we saw that especially early in the game. I think he had a big steal late in the game on Mason Plumlee, got his hand in there, and that ended up being a big possession. And like we said, you know, overall not a great game for Kyrie Irving, but he did enough to help the team win.
Yeah, 18 points, 5 assists, 4 boards. The 3 steals and the block is what sticks out to me, Nick. I thought that in a weird, I mean, he had some absolutely just goddamn in crazy plays. Just his footwork, that post shot, I think that's the reason why he wants 8 post touches a night, because it looked a lot like Kobe being Bryant in that shot that he took. He's an offensive wizard in so many goddamn ways, and it was good to see him really bring that defensive intensity, because I thought when the Nets did need it, you know, he really stepped up in that department, and it gives me confidence, because normally we're talking about Kyrie Irving, you know, being the guy that's getting cooked in the screen, and you know, him and DJ next to each other are weaknesses at the time, because there's a defensive weaknesses in both of them. But tonight, I thought he really, really showed effort there. And it really did help us, you know, hang around and make sure that we stuck in this game and had a lead for the most parts.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, he did suffer that elbow to the back by, I believe, Rodney McGruder.
Man, I know why Klay Thompson hates that dude as well, man. Like, God, he's going to be out of the league soon, apparently. I'll get him out of the league if he keeps elbowing freaking Kyrie Irving like that.
No, that was mean. That was like an elbow right to the shoulder blade, bone-on-bone contact right there. Definitely didn't feel good. Obviously, some discomfort. Hopefully, it's nothing serious. You know, obviously, if anything...
I got out there like 2 minutes later. Like, it was just like... Well, Nets
probably just a bruise. Just going to have a wicked bruise.
Yeah, and it's going to look, maybe, you know, his shot might be a little bit short, and you know, him sort of getting the elevation in that department, we might see sort of the gritty Kyrie Irving going forward. But, you know, we've got a couple of nights off until we take on the Knicks, and we'll see how that game performance goes. We might get Blake back. Not necessarily sure that we do. And I don't think Kevin Durant is going to be back anytime soon in that respect either. But, yeah, if Kyrie, if he needs to be rested, we've sort of seen James Harden lead the way as well. Play it safe, play conservative. If he's out, he's out. The ultimate goal that we all want is him healthy and all of our guys healthy for when the games start to matter, those 16 games.
100%. I think that's the approach moving forward. And like I said, even with rest, I think at times the Nets might have to just tell guys like, hey, we need you to take this game off, especially James Harden. We know you don't want to, but just with this condensed season, you don't want to take that extra risk just for a win. And obviously, we're never happy to see anybody get hurt. Joel Embiid being out for 2 to 3 weeks could lead to the Nets gaining some ground in that, you know, first seed race. But still, at the end of the day, I don't think that's the end all be all. Like, if you're the first, second, or third seed, it's really not going to probably matter in most cases.
No, I think ultimately, if the Heat can get to like that 5th seed or something, and the 6, 7, 8 is something like, you know, the Bulls, the Hawks, and the Hornets or the Knicks or whatever it is, you still want to be first or second. But if, you know, the Miami Heat only slip in, and, you know, it's almost like, you know, the latter points of previous seasons where the Nuggets have tanked games so they don't have to go against the Lakers or whoever else is sort of like their sort of bogey team, and the Blazers are winning games and they get the bad matchup and such. You know, ultimately, we don't need to think about that at this point in time yet, Nick, because we're only 39 games in the season. There's still 33 to go, and the focus, I think, is going to be from the team on how we can defeat a red-hot firing Knicks team. And I think it's going to be a fun game, and I think that there's a they'll want to get one back on us, especially after, you know, in a way, we did embarrass them when, you know, we had that big trade and we had like 7 fit and healthy guys. Kevin Durant comes out there, DJ has a revitalized performance, and we embarrassed the Knicks that night. And I think that the way that they've been playing, Tom Thibodeau is a coach of the year contender, I think they're going to be pretty fired up.
Yeah, no, for sure, Jack. And obviously, you know, the Nets haven't been playing their best basketball these last two games. So maybe they either turn it around or maybe they have to grind out another game. And that's kind of what the Knicks have been doing all season. They're not necessarily playing pretty basketball. They're just grinding out games. So I don't want to say it'll be a good test, but it should be a fun matchup.
Absolutely. And, you know, RJ Barrett, since informed Julius Randle is a most improved player contender. Overall, you know, every game is going to be a tough one. That everyone can beat everyone on their night. You know, Detroit has beaten every single goddamn team that is contending for the championship this season. And the Knicks are playing really well. All the games at the Pacers coming up as well, where I'm sure we'll have plenty of tissues and be bawling our eyes out seeing Caris LeVert in the blue and gold. And shout out to Caris coming back tonight against the Suns. We're going to be watching it. We're, as soon as this one's over, we've got about 5 minutes until the game starts, and I think Nick and I are going to be glued watching the Pacers. We're probably our second and or third team with the Cavs this season, with Jared Allen and Caris LeVert, Nets legends playing for those respective teams. What a goddamn story. What a goddamn legend. Caris LeVert, man. That dude deserves it all.
No minute restriction either.
Man, so, he got a minimum restriction after a freaking finger injury with Kenny Atkinson. And coming back from like a near-death experience, it's like Nate Bjorkman's like, nah, you're going to be right, man. Play 45 minutes for us. We need you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it should be fun. I'm intrigued to see what happens with Caris. Obviously, the Pacers have been struggling a little bit, so this could be a major boost for them. Anything else you want to talk about, Jack, in terms of the game or anything, Nets, before we get out of here?
Look, I still think Jack Harlow is continuing to play really, really well for us. Tyler Johnson, TJ, as I love to call him, continuing to be a steady presence out there. I always look beyond the box of what he does. I sort of just go by the eye test. And again, the eye test hasn't failed me with his consistency. Jeff Green as well continues to sort of feel his way back. The three ball isn't falling yet, but he's still, you know, getting those old man, sort of Uncle Jeff post moves and continuing to take the charges and do something that we don't necessarily expect a 34-year-old to do. So, and yet another consistent performance from some of our bench and role players.
Yeah, no, I agree on Tyler Johnson, Jack. Always just high energy and effort and kind of just does all the small things out there. It's a nice outlet for a lot of the players in terms of when they get double teamed. Like you said, Jeff Green, I'm keeping an eye on that 3-point shot. He definitely is hesitating a little bit, and it just sucks is because he was having such a career year from three, and then a shoulder injury is just going to throw you out of rhythm, and that what seems to be the case.
Yeah, well, hopefully all these guys are fit and firing and they feel that confidence in their own bodies to take shots from wherever it is on the floor. But, you know, Jeff Green continues to be an impact, as does Tyler Johnson, on both ends of the floor.
Yep, and maybe we'll see TLC back in the next game. But, Jack, always a pleasure, and big thanks to everybody for listening. And check us out on all streaming platforms.
That's wild.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.